The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 22nd of June, 2020. On the podcast today, I have Andrew Player, CEO of Vast Resources, VST is ticker there, and Andrew explains what the money they've raised will be used for and provides a general update. Plus, Ollie Green, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Brave Bison, BBSN ticker there, and Ollie explains the business and discusses his vision for the company. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Smart Metering Systems, Expediator, and Catena Innovations. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. You can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see a host of other content by companies, including Director Plus. There's a note there from SP Angel Morning View. There's, in fact, Brave Bison news. There's Vast Resources news. There's also our COVID-19 index. Let's see who's the highest riser there. Synergen is up the most on there today, 17.5% up. And down, Tiziana Life Sciences, and they're down 8% to 104. Okay, check that out there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Player, CEO of Vast Resources. VAST is the ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Now you've
nice to be here.
Yes, good to have you back on. And you've raised some money, just under 1.5 million, and we'll discuss exactly why that was done and what you're using it for. Before we do that, Andrew, as always, if someone's listening who's not familiar with Vast Resources, just give them a brief summary as to what it's all about, please, if you could.
Certainly. Vast Resources is a mining company that's located in Romania and in Zimbabwe. We're currently in the process of reopening the Baita Supply Mine, which is a polymetallic mine in the Apulsin Mountains, where we'll be producing several different concentrates, which is a copper gold concentrate and a lead and zinc and silver concentrate, as well as molybdenum and eventually tungsten as well. We've spent quite a considerable amount of time and money on the project, and we will be operational and in production by the end of July, with the planned first deliveries of concentrate at the end of August. As well as in Zimbabwe, we're working on the community diamond concession, which unfortunately is on hold temporarily while COVID is in play. Once that's done, we still believe that we'll be continuing with the diamond sector in Zimbabwe as well.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so just under 1.5 million raised, and a couple of questions here from some investors. And the first one is, why are you doing a placing now so close to production?
Well, several reasons. Particularly the one that's the primary reason for the placing now is that we'd prefer to do it now ahead of the conversion period while we're waiting for the refinancing of the total facility to take place. And this will take a little bit of time, and we don't want to be caught when we said that we didn't want a conversion to take effect at the end of July. We've got several finance companies that we're engaged with and awaiting term sheets, and we're in the process of due diligence with all of them, as we've advised the market previously. We're not certain that it will be concluded by the end of July. However, we do believe it will happen post-production. And we wanted to ensure that no conversion took place, as we said to the market, we were trying to avoid. Historically, when you have these sort of convertible transactions or financing transactions, the market perceives it to be a negative rather than a positive. And we just wanted to make sure that while the money was available to us, that we were prepared to be able to pay it off in cash and redeem it in cash, even though it's at a slightly lower price to the conversion price that's stipulated in the agreement. And it was there for a protectionary measure of the share price long term. And the other reason for the raising is that once we get into production and until we get the first receivables and sales from the production, we need to ensure that we continue the operation and the processing. As you, although you start mining and producing underground, you still have to go through the processing of the material to produce the concentrate. And after that, then you have to sell it. But it's not a matter of just selling it on a daily basis. We have to stockpile. And depending on the off-taker, which in our instance, it's Mercuria for the copper at the moment, and we're tendering out the lead and the zinc as well, which will be finalized prior to production. You need to ensure that you continue the processing until you get the quantity that is deemed acceptable by the off-taker, and that could take a little bit of time, probably the end of August before first deliveries will take place. But you still need to continue the processing for the September and the October, and we need to ensure that we've got cash sufficient enough to continue the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And question two here is, why are you paying off Atlas Capital Markets at a lower price than the conversion price?
Because historically, when the company did do convertible loans, I'll give you an example. Back in early 2018, there was a short-term convertible loan, and the market perceived it as a death spiral, which it wasn't. It was a fixed price, and the share price dropped well below the conversion price, and we don't want to see that happening again. So we want to ensure that the share price remains stable and increases, and avoid that perception of a drop in price due to a conversion. And that was a very, very difficult decision to make, and it was more about maintaining the share price and allowing it to increase to make sure that shareholders get the benefit of the uprise once we start production and we become a producer rather than in the project phase. Mm. So it was there for the long-term benefit of shareholders. And yeah, as the money was available now, we didn't want to leave it too late, because if you leave it too late, then people start to panic and it causes a downward trend.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And third one, you sort of touched on production times a bit, but what's happening with the JORC and production times?
Well, the JORC is in process. We've already got the met test back, and we've previously announced that. The assays are being finalised. Being finalised as in they're going in batch samples to ALS. We'll start to see the results in the first week or first to second week of July, and we'll start to announce those as they become available to us. And that will be the run-up to the JORC. Everything else is on target. And I think it's very important to reiterate to the market that the JORC is not necessary for the finance. The JORC we are doing is A, for our own internal requirements, and also to add value to the company. And also it allows us to apply third-party validation to our financial models. So without the JORC, it's almost impossible to update the market with what our predictions are for cash flows in the future. So with the JORC, we'll have a third-party validation to costs and to quality, and from there we can then produce a report that people will have visibility on what sort of revenue generation we'll be getting out of the Beta mine.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Andrew, in summary, if someone's listening, not following the story yet, but, you know, likes the sound of the progress you're making here, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Vast Resources to their watch list, please.
Oh, certainly. My pleasure to do so. Well, Vast Resources, I mean, we have an extraordinary polymetallic mine in Bayit Supply that is about a month away from production and revenue generation. It's a low-cost producer with a high-quality concentrate. We've got off-takers already signed up for the majority of our production, so that means we'll be a revenue-generating mining company in Romania, and while we still await the final sign-off for the community concession of diamonds in Zimbabwe post-COVID. I think they're two very good reasons to start investing.
Excellent stuff. Thanks very much, Andrew, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ollie Green, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Brave Bison. That's BBSN ticker. Ollie, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm quite familiar with Brave Bison, and in the past I have been known to hold a bit of stock. Not anymore. There's been a bit of change there. It's interesting you coming on board. But for people not familiar with what you do at Brave Bison, can you just summarise the business, please, Ollie?
Of course. So Brave Bison Group PLC is a next generation media and marketing services group. We have two parts of our business. The first is advertising. So we manage a bunch of our own media brands, as well as channels on behalf of other companies and brands and businesses. Advertising is inserted into our media brands as content, and we monetize through a commission. The second part of our business is creative services. So we work with brands directly, as well as clients, on briefs such as influencer marketing, branded content, production, and social strategy. So two parts to our business, advertising and creative services.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and take us through your background, Ollie, and how you came to be, because I know we've had a recent change of CEO, but so take us through your background and how you came to be involved here as chairman and chief exec.
Sure. So I have been running a digital marketing group called Tangent for the past 4.5 years. I became aware of Brave Bison about 18 months ago and started following it really, really closely because I thought that it was in a very interesting space and stood to benefit from the growth in sort of digital advertising. And I managed to pick up through my agency Tangent a stake of 18.6% from Woodford Asset Management. Mm-hmm. So that's when I sort of began to get involved with the company and start to talk to the board. And over the past 12 months, I have increased my stake to 27.3%. I joined the board in December 2019, became chairman pretty quickly thereafter, and I became chief executive last week as well. So very excited to lead the company. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's very well positioned to benefit from the growth in digital advertising and our relationships with all of the relevant platforms, including Snapchat, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube.
Yeah, and I did ask before you came on, I said, how old are you? And you said to me 28, and that's quite young for a chief executive chairman, isn't it?
It is, yes. But I think in this space, it's good to have your finger on the pulse when it comes to all things social. And lots of our audiences across these different social platforms are also quite young.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And so you recently acquired a company called The Hook. Can you tell us about that and why you acquired that, please?
Absolutely. So The Hook is a youth and entertainment channel that has a very large audience across TikTok and Instagram, about 15 million followers. The Hook actually, unfortunately, went into administration during the sort of COVID lockdown, and we were able to purchase all of its assets for £150,000, mm-hmm. which I believe and the board believes is extremely good value. The business had raised money on significantly higher valuations, and so I think that's really exciting moving forward. The Hook monetizes its content via two ways. It works with brands directly, and it has client relationships with the likes of Boohoo, Apple, and Vodafone. Mm-hmm. And then it also produces original series for various platforms, which it monetizes through sponsorships, but also the platform advertising. The Hook will form a key part of our social first publishing strategy. And we've got lots of original series planned for release over the next 6 and 12 months.
Yeah, it's a valuable audience there. So what do they do wrong then? Why did they go into administration? If they had that audience there, what are they doing? What were they not doing right?
I think perhaps they focused slightly too much on branded content. Branded content is one of those things that can be quite lumpy. You're working with a client, you're billing them, but then when that project comes to sort of finish, you can be left quite exposed. And during the lockdown, obviously lots of the clients sort of paused or pulled back on their marketing spend, and they were left quite exposed.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And as far as Brave Bison now, what's you know, your USP there? What sets you apart from your peers there?
Sure. So I think that if we look at a company like S4 Capital, which has done unbelievably well, and I have enormous respect for Martin Sorrell, he's managed to build a sort of new era digital first marketing services group. And I think that our services sort of mimic that model in terms of being social and digital first. But at the same time, we also have an audience that we own. So we are not a pure play services business. We have the sort of high growth and the velocity of something like Complex or a BuzzFeed or a Vice. But then we also have that profitable sort of marketing services engine that is the sort of the very stable and reliable part of our business.
Yeah, and what's your ambition here, Ollie, then? Because obviously at 28, I assume you're quite ambitious to be where you are already. What's your ambition for Brave Bison?
I'm really excited to build a sort of a media and marketing group for the new era. Mm. I love the idea of building out our services proposition. When I talk to our clients and when I talk to our teams, there are definitely more services that I think we could be offering. We're keen to look into performance marketing. We're keen to double and triple down on influencer marketing. We're looking at conversion rate optimization. And so there's definitely a broader range of services that we could be offering to our clients to really make sure that we are sort of pose that end-to-end solution. At the same time, I'm really excited about building out more sort of communities, more audiences that we can monetize through brand partnerships as well as through platform advertising. And then I think in the longer term, there's definitely scope for us to monetize those audiences in other ways. You've got the likes of Complex and Imagine Media and Doing Things Media in the States that are actually putting together subscriptions for their content, they're going more into commerce, they're throwing events, they run sort of R&D campaigns for clients. And so there are multiple ways that we can sort of develop our revenue mix in the future once we've built out these highly engaged, large audiences across sort of social platforms as well as our own websites and apps. And I should point out that The Hook actually gives us access to our first website because it has a website with an audience as well as having communities and audiences across all of the relevant social platforms.
Yeah, well, I know when, you know, when I spoke to Claire a long time back, well, it's not a long year or so back, there was a heavy reliance on Facebook, but now, what's your strategy across? Because I know you're across more platforms now. But so, what's your strategy here? And where does most of the revenue come from at the moment? And what are you hoping to achieve?
That's true. During 2018, we were heavily reliant on Facebook. But since then, we have developed audiences and revenue lines across lots of the other social platforms. Our YouTube business grew 60% last year. So we have a really strong YouTube business. Instagram and TikTok are not yet monetized for us or for very few other digital publishers. But we now have audiences on those platforms, and so as soon as the platforms do begin to turn on the monetization, we stand to benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. And so, I mean, where do you hope to be then? If we're speaking now in a year's time, where do you hope to be then, a year's time, Ollie?
I think it would be good for us to have sent out and developed more original series for our media brands. I think that there's definitely money to be made in developing social first, short form pieces of content that we can be putting on Facebook, TikTok, and Snapchat and involving brands in that sort of story with a view to sort of creating a sort of monetized sponsorship or partnership with the brands. And so I would definitely like to see sort of between 6 and 12 original short form series having gone out. I'd like to also have more client relationships within the sort of influencer marketing and branded content space. I think we do a very, very good job across our APAC business. So we have an office in Singapore that works with some really sort of tier one luxury, enormous clients. We work with SK2, we work with Lego, we work with P&G. So some phenomenal relationships. And I'd like to broaden and deepen those relationships over the next 12 months.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, Ollie, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. To get on that list, someone has to hit your follow button, and or several people have to hit your follow button. So to get on someone's watch list and get on that most followed list, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. So I think it's important to state that I, as the chairman and chief executive, have skin in the game. I own 27.3% through my digital agency Tangent, and so that there's no one that stands to gain more currently than me from Brave Bison being successful. The second reason is that we stand to benefit massively from the growth in digital advertising and the proliferation of digital media. And the third is that we have a very sort of diversified and unique sort of business model, in that we sell to clients directly, and we have a services offering, but also we have a sort of more automated, more programmatic advertising business that is fully fledged, and it's highly scalable.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff, Ollie. It's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Definitely. Justin, thank you very much for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al?
Very good morning, Justin. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, yes. Had a bit of a Father's Day sort of meal, picnic thing around the house, outside. Nice weather, a few drinks. It's never good to have a few drinks on a Sunday evening, though, is it, really? It's hard work getting up the next day, you know?
Well, it's not, is it? Well, I have to say, I mean, we had sort of a socially distancing family gathering yesterday. I had my kids and their partners over, and it was very nice. But, we were sitting in the garden, barbecuing, and, of course, you know, drinking in the sunshine, all the rest of it. And then we got on to the evening, and they bought me a very nice bottle of single malt whiskey, Lafroy. So I had a couple of those yesterday evening, and feeling slightly jaded this morning.
Yes, but the market's opened, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, whatever that is.
Well, they were marked down, I think, 100 points, weren't they, prior to the open? Of course, they fell, but not...
It's America. It's like America, like the moon, yeah. Isn't it, with gravity, like the tide, you know, the same effect that it has on tides, the moon. You know, but it's basically, the American markets were, I tweeted out earlier on, saying, American markets up, European markets down. Now, the American markets have pulled the European markets up. It's like... It's insane, really. The power of the markets, the American markets, just non-stop rallying all the time.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. And you know, you look at the drivers, and I published something a couple of months ago on my Twitter feed, which is the Warren Buffett indicator, Warren Buffett's indicator basically has the market trading way, way ahead of the valuations of U.S. companies, which is. It's basically all of the companies, their valuations, their turnover, their profits added up together and combined. And it is way ahead of those. So, what's it trading on?
Well, I just think people are looking through. You know, you've got the stimulus, of course. That's always there. That's helped a lot. You've got people still spending online. And I always say this. You know, there's plenty of bargains out there. We sometimes spend too much time looking at the indices, when if you don't trade the indices, it's no point looking at them, really, because you know the S&P and the Nasdaq are largely swayed by the FANG plus Microsoft, which I think for the S&P alone, so it's 500 companies in the S&P 500, and yet just those companies, FANG plus Microsoft, make up 22% of the weighting, the market caps. So it's a massive sway, and they've done quite well, haven't they, during this lockdown? You know, they haven't had a lot of problems. I mean, you got Microsoft with Teams and their servers, and Amazon with their servers, and obviously their websites, so it's a lot of these companies. Netflix has done very well, all these companies. Facebook's doing okay. So they're rallying back to where they were, really, essentially. So we shouldn't look at that. There's always a bargain to be had in the market somewhere, you know? I mean, and
there is,
individual stocks, it's a stock market. It's a market of stocks. That's the way you should look at it. Individual stocks. There's plenty of bargains to be had and potential in lots of individual companies. So indices sometimes don't give a distorted view of it, you know?
No, they don't. Absolutely. And I think it goes back to basics, really. If you're starting out in stock picking, and I know a lot of new investors have come to the market during the period, because obviously they've been at home, they've not been working, or they've been furloughed, they've had some money to invest, and rather than sort of sticking into a bank or building society where there's zero interest, they've started to look at the markets. And of course, some of the COVID success stories have been incredible. And if as a first-time investor, you got into one of those stocks and you've seen it 10 back, clearly there's a very good sort of platform there to build on that success. But I think at the end of it, if you're working in an industry and you have an understanding of the dynamics of that particular industry, look at the stocks, look at the listed companies trading in that sector, and then you'll get some idea, and perhaps you'll get some ideas. You understand what drives it. As you rightly say, it's not about the indices. It's about the companies and how they're doing. Mm-hmm. So certainly going back to the technology companies, you look at some of these technology funds. I mean, I went back into Fidelity Global Technology, and that's already up 6-7% since I went back into it. It's relentless. It's incredible.
Yeah, I've just got that one fund, which is the Vanguard Life Strategy, 100% equity, and it's like 20% in the biggest stocks in the US, and 20% over here, big stocks. And that's up as well since, I always put a bit in every month automatically by direct debit. So it goes in there, top up every month. So, and it's in fact, it's got about 40% is exposure to American markets. So it's doing okay. So it's fine. Marvellous. I think everyone, if you are an investor, a new investor, I think everyone should have at least one fund which diversifies the portfolio.
Absolutely.
Have a big chunk of that, pay into it on a monthly basis. And I'll be doing that now till I retire, I think, or beyond that, just keep top every month on it. So that way it'll be, instantly diversifies my portfolio pretty much.
Yep.
I can have individual sort of opportunities there alongside that. Right, anyway, talking about individual opportunities, Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, first of all, this is a company that we have discussed many times, I say over the years. I mean, it is going back a number of years since I first started recording on the Vox podcast, but this has been a pretty...
I was just thinking that before you came on. I thought, how long have we been doing this now? How long? Because you were the first guest, I think, and on the podcast, other than a couple of mates of mine who I had on the weekend. But,
that's right, I remember. Yeah.
How long have we been doing this? How long has it been? 70 years now?
Well, yes, probably, yes. The year of our good Lord, 1892. I was going back through some of the old images from the site the other day, and I think this goes back to, goodness me, 2016, 2015. So,
getting on. Right.
A long time, yes. Yeah. So anyway, this is one company that we have discussed at various points over the years. Smart Metering Systems, SMS, and the name of the company pretty well implies what the company does. We've all heard of smart metering systems at home. That's for gas, electricity, energy management, data collection, and SMS are the UK leaders in that particular area. The epic code is SMS. Easy to remember. Shares currently have traded as high as 742p on the year and as low as 308p. Number of reasons for that. The company have gone through a number of changes and obviously prior to the interim results announcement last September, the shares fell to their year low, which was at 308p. But they've had a very strong run since that point, announced their full year results in March 17, and a real shift in their strategy too. So they announced in March with the full year results that Columbia Threadneedle would come in and fund what they call the SMS CARE pipeline. Now, CARE is carbon reduction assets, which is a broad range of assets attached to the overall SMS offering. In addition, the company announced it has sold a portfolio of its meter assets to Equitix for $291 million. And at a stroke, that took out the debt that the company was carrying and put it into net cash territory. Along with those developments, the company stated a long-term dividend policy. So it's boosted the dividend up to 25p, about 4.5%, and it'll apply the RPI metric to that dividend until 2024. So basically, if you're invested in this company, you're set to receive a steady growing dividend for at least the next 4 to 5 years. Along with that, the company announced growth in revenue to $114 million from $98 million, pre-exceptional EBITDA up 14%, and the CEO, Alan Foy, who's been there for many years, said the performance of the company was a testament to the SMS's market position and operational capabilities within the difficult marketplace. He also stated that the UK economy is the first economy to adopt zero net emissions by 2050, and the new partnerships announced with Equitix and obviously Columbia Threadneedle positions us extremely well to take full advantage of that. So it's a restructuring of the company. They've wiped out their net debt. The shares are currently trading at 560 pence, off the year highs. So I think this the opportunity that exists now here with this company, it's not going to deliver spectacular growth, but nonetheless, it's geared up for growth. It doesn't have any debt, which is always a very attractive factor if you're looking for companies to invest in. And it's the leading company in its field. And I think we're all aware where smart technology is going. Indeed, we were talking about the technology funds in the US a little earlier, and of course this is one company that dovetails right into that. So I think SMS they're in a good position now and offer a great investment proposition going forward.
Do you know what, I've for a while I've been looking at bigger stocks, and I entertain, I bought a few, then I just jump back out. I thought, do you know what, they don't interest me, the bigger stocks. I'm much more interested in smaller stocks and microcaps of that. And like I said, I have a fund that is invested in big stocks, essentially, so that covers them all off. And I just like one-story stocks, you know, that they have the potential to do multiples of where they started. And so,
I agree completely. I think that's the thing. It's about that mix in the portfolio. But if there are companies that are steady growth companies and pay a decent dividend, don't offer spectacular growth, but do offer good year-on-year growth potential. I think with its strategic reset, SMS now offers a far more attractive investment proposition than it did a year ago. So, over the years, it's performed well. I mean, we've spoken about the company at various bases of its share price development, but it's always grown every time we've revisited the investment proposition. So, you know, over a period of time, it certainly delivers growth, and of course, it now pays a really good dividend too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, possibly a contrarian pick, depending on which way you look at it. But this is a road haulage company, Expedia, to XPD. And I know you've spoken to Stephen Bly, the CEO, several times on the podcast. I should say that Stephen Bly...
Well, he's not the CEO anymore. He's just stepping down. He did say he was going to, but
Yeah, I think for health reasons, he's been working from home during the COVID crisis. But he did say for health reasons he was stepping down to spend more time with his family. But he remains on the board, and senior management in the forms of Rob Ross and Dana Ionescu have stepped up to provide joint cover until a permanent CEO is found. So Expediator, road haulage, we have spoken about the company before, and they have a very strong pallet business and haulage business across Eastern Europe, Romania, and so on. The company announced a strong set of results, full year results. Revenues grew 19% to 213 million, adjusted pre-tax of 5.5 million. But again, I mean, it trades on a derisory market cap considering the turnover, but clearly the profit margins at the moment with a business that obviously has low margins is a reflection of that. Nonetheless, again, a company without debt, positive, they're cash positive, they have 7 million in the bank. And as the results, of course, were announced in April, and the company said at the time that it was asset light and had a flexible cost base, which meant it was well set to meet the challenge of COVID. And also going forward, I mean, the Expediator so far have grown through acquisition. I remember seeing Stephen Blythe present at an event a few years ago, and they were about to make an acquisition at that point. And he stated then that our policy is very much growth through acquisition. It's a fragmented industry. There are a number of small operators, which really puts us in a great position with our war chest to go out and acquire these companies. And indeed, he's doing that. Company also announced a scrip dividend of just over a penny, and that's that was paid. As I say, the company, I think in comparison to many Rothschild companies, of course, we've spoken about Eddie Stobart in the past as well, are very well placed. They're a smaller size operator, more flexible, paying a decent dividend. I suppose the only uncertainty is that with Stephen Blythe having stepped down after 32 years, where's the company going to go in terms of management direction? But I think in terms of its finances, in terms of its operational strategy, Expediator looks in a very promising position to deliver a recovery as we enter the second half of the year.
Yeah, I've been on the podcast a lot, and I spoke recently with Robert Ross just after the announcement, and he seems a very capable fella. And I did say to him, "Listen, Robert Ross and Dan Ionescu, you're the two guys jointly covering the CEO." But I said, "Robert, listen, your name is first in that announcement, and alphabetically it shouldn't be. So I assume, and you were based in the UK, and he's based in Eastern Europe." So I assume you're pretty much, you're closer to the position than Ianor is. Dano, sorry. If you'd been announced as co-CEO, and you were named first, but yet, alphabetically your name should be second, I think, you're probably the man for the job, unless you do something wrong,
Well, I guess the business is very much focused in Eastern Europe, but of course, from the investors and the shareholders are pretty well all based in this country. When the company are talking to the markets, they have to take that into account, and perhaps that's the reason for it. Maybe Robert is closer to the investors than Dano is. Dano could be more operationally based.
Dano, I like that.
Dano, murder one, book him. Yeah, Dano could be more operationally focused, and Robert could be more strategically focused, and closer to the investors. Anyway, that's by the by. It's still a very strong company. They run a very tight ship there, and they've got 7 million cash in the bank. So they're well positioned.
Well positioned, right? Lovely.
Clearly.
Clearly. anything else out there, Al, worth mentioning?
Yeah, I just want to talk about Cat and Eye Innovation, CTEA. There was a development last Friday that is well worth mentioning. So Cat and Eye, tiny company, 5 million market cap, have developed basically they are involved in high-speed blockchain. Their CTO is a guy called Alan Simpson.
High-speed what? Blockchain?
Blockchain,
That's what they said then.
High-speed toilet chains, yes.
Wow, that's what I need, a faster flush.
Fast flush. High speed blockchain. So they're using blockchain technology. Obviously, blockchain technology is primarily associated with cryptocurrency, but the Cat and I have employed it in very different ways. Using it to create an immutable record keeping transactional service, and they have a number of contracts with various football clubs. clubs and communities for various different offerings that they have. They have on-site and on-side, which is their football community-based offering. But the company went through a structural change early this year. A new board was announced. Brian, a chap called Brian Thompson, came in. He now owns 29% of the company. He's a Newcastle-based entrepreneur and runs an insurance business called BTIC and Third Eye Neurotech. John Farthing, well-respected CFO, has come into the group. And they announced a joint venture with Zedian Group, led by Professor Michael Mainelli. And if you want to know who that guy is, Google him. He's a very well-regarded tech entrepreneur. To develop a Cove, an app called Cove ID, COVID. It's basically a back-to-work app where people who are COVID-free can identify themselves as such. And this was put on trial with Newcastle Premier Health. And the company announced last Friday that trial had been very successfully completed. It had ramped up the scale of the trial halfway through the process and ticked all the boxes. So on the back of that, the company are now rolling out the app to commercial organisations throughout the UK. It's early days, of course. And they did state in the RNS that there were no guarantees that sales would come as a result of this. But nonetheless, it's been proven with a high-profile health organisation in Newcastle, and there's no reason to expect that it won't go much further from here. So Cat and Eye Innovations, CTEA.
Right, lovely, yes. Do you own any stock there?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do have some stock in Cat and I. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yes, I do. Yes.
Yes, I do. Is there anything wrong with that?
No. It's all right.
I've declared my position. As I often do.
It's a sitting position right now. Right. Yeah, lovely.
Yes. Sitting down, facing forward. Yes.
Marvellous, right. Al. Thanks for that, and no doubt we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak next week. Cheers, mate.
Okay, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Gfinity, G-F-I-N. At four, Polarion Holdings, P-O-L-X. Good interview there with Richard on Friday, the CEO. At three, Omega Diagnostics. That's down. In fact, what's happening here? Gfinity is non-mover there, 1.5 pence. Polarion is up 3.85 pence, 27 pence. At three, Omega Diagnostics, that's down 7.4 to 50 pence. At two, UK Oil and Gas, up 10.78% to 0.231. And at one, it's Tomco Energy, down 8.2 to 1.4 pence. Some people's obviously ramping that on Twitter. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Fast Forward Innovations, Investee Company Update, Leap Gaming. At four, Brave Bison. Brave Bison and IWF and MCF launch influencer campaign. At three, Omega Diagnostics investor presentation. At two, Newformix board change. Dr. Dan resigning from the board there. Very sad to see, but we'll see what happens next. Hopefully we'll try and get Dan on the podcast. Who knows, though? And at one, it's Integumin COVID-19 MTA signed with Aptamer Group. As a collaboration that targets wastewater identification of local COVID-19 hotspots. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.